Happy Thursday, everybody. July 5th, we are back to break down UFC 226. We did the prelims a couple days ago. Today, we're doing the main card, a really fun five fights we're going to see this Saturday at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, UFC 226. Joined, as always, by P-Money on Twitter, at Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, what's up, man?
Oh, Jake, just big chilling, my man. Recuperating well from a fun fourth. It was a good time. Friends and family, beautiful situation. Hopefully you had a lovely one as well.
Oh, yeah, a lot of baseball, a lot of beef cooked up. I watched Joey Chestnut consume 74 hot dogs to start my day. A crazy amount of DPMs for Chestnut just blowing away the competition at the old Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. A great way to start your July 4th, along with, grilling. Very hot temperatures in both of the locales we live in. The SoCal desert and me over here in Tampa Bay. That sweltering heat. But man, this is a hot, hot card coming up. UFC 226, like I said, we broke down the prelims a couple days ago. You can catch that episode on all the places we post up episodes, iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube. For links for all that, just follow us on Twitter at the MMA Podcast. We talked about the prelims, a really fun set of prelims going down on Fight Pass and Vox Sports 1, and then 10 on the East, 7 in the West, the pay-per-view starts, and I'm really stoked. I guess we'll waste no more time. We start off with a heavyweight fight between longtime kickboxing great Gokhan Saki taking on Khalil Roundtree. This fight was put on a while back, but was scrapped because of injury. This is going to be a really, really fun fight. Both of these guys are insanely talented. Khalil Roundtree is just a phenomenal athlete. 6-2, lost his first two fights in the UFC, but has bounced back and hasn't lost in his last three. He did lose the decision win in his last fight against Mikhail Oleksychuk, but it was switched to a no contest because his opponent tested positive for clomiphene. But looked really good knocking out Daniel Jolly and Paul Craig. But as good as he looked, I don't know. It's hard to pick against the Turkish Tyson Gokhan Saki, an absolute legend in kickboxing, now is fighting in MMA. Won his UFC debut back in September 2017 via KO. And I'm picking Saki here, too. I think he is the favorite in Vegas. I'll double-check. He is a slight favorite, minus 130 over Khalil Roundtree. And the reason is just because of that insane technique. I mean, he is one of the most technical strikers in the world. And obviously, switching into mixed martial arts, there aren't many people in the sport who have the kind of technique, both in kicking and punching, that Gokhan Saki does. Khalil Roundtree, stylistically, is just not going to give him that problem that you might see Saki encounter down the road in a grappler or a wrestler or someone who can neutralize that striking ability. So for that reason, I'm leaning Saki here. But this is talk about your 4th of July fireworks. This is going to be a very, very nice fight to lead off the main pay-per-view card.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't be a better choice. Gokhan Saki, with his K-1 background, he's coming in looking to put on a big show for UFC Fight Week. And he definitely has a good chance against Khalil Roundtree Jr. Roundtree, definitely no easy out, though. Very tough opponent. 4-2 in his MMA record. And definitely more of a striker. I'm sorry, 6-2, 4 wins by knockout. And so he's definitely going to look to stand and bang. His 2 UFC victories come by way of knockout, 1 by knee, 1 by punches. And I don't know if he's really going to want to go there with Gokhan Saki, though. Saki is just, obviously, Jake, as you had mentioned, one of the best strikers on the planet, really. I mean, his kickboxing career speaks for itself. He's only 1-1 in MMA. He was 0-1, had a fight in July 11th, 2004, and, you know, had a big statement, though, with the performance of the night, winning knockout over Henrique da Silva at the St. Preux versus Okami card, and definitely has a chance to make a big statement here. Definitely a fitting main card opener.
And then we get into the meat of it. We got Anthony Pettis taking on Michael Chiesa at lightweight. This is a fight that originally was supposed to go down at UFC 223, but because Conor McGregor threw a hand dolly through the window of a bus, the glass split open Michael Chiesa's forehead, causing him to be medically withdrawn from the fight. And the fight was rescheduled for UFC 226. Sounds like I made all that up, but unfortunately that is the God's honest truth. So we finally see it, Chiesa versus Pettis. Another interesting, I wouldn't say the first fight was the most interesting stylistic matchup on the card, but this one might be. You have Michael Chiesa, I mean, just absolutely dominant on the ground, has that signature rear naked choke that he hit Benny Alderush, Jim Miller, Colton Smith, Ally Aquinta, the list goes on with, taking on Anthony Pettis, someone who's sort of fallen from grace back, you know, back he was the lightweight champion up until 2015. His record was 18-2. Since then, he's 2-5. His only wins against Charles Oliveira and Jim Miller, dropping fights to RDA, Eddie Alvarez, Edson Barboza, Max Holloway, and Dustin Poirier. Moved down to featherweight for two fights, beat Charles Oliveira via guillotine, then got knocked out by Max Holloway. Even though I guess it wasn't technically a title fight because Pettis missed weight. But all of that aside, yeah, just really, really has slipped a little bit as of really the fight against Rafael Dos Anjos. I believe he, I think he broke his orbital, I think, that fight. And a lot of people have been saying, you know, ever since then, Alvarez just hasn't looked the same. Even though, you know, he's still young. The guy is only 31 years old, taking on Michael Chiesa, just a year younger. But his trajectory seems to be a lot different. Even though he did lose his last fight against Kevin Lee, you know, before that he had strung three wins together. And, you know, he is a kind of new face to the UFC. You know, he was a part of that tough season all the way back in 2012. But really kind of didn't fight much, I feel like, around, you know, recently. But, you know, got those three wins against Mitch Clark, Jim Miller, and Benny Alderush. Seemed to be kind of jostling his way in for a title shot before losing to Kevin Lee. And that, you know, Lee fight was huge for him. I think that's the one that vaulted him up to a fight against Tony Ferguson. So, you know, both of these guys are big names at lightweight. Honestly, my brain's saying Chiesa. My gut is saying Pettis here. Stylist, I don't know. This is it all obviously depends on how the fight plays out. But Pettis is not a slouch on the ground. I don't, you know, Chiesa's really able to take advantage of people who don't have that really polished Brazilian jiu-jitsu acumen. And I feel like Pettis is at the level to where Chiesa isn't going to be able, you know, he may have the advantage, but I'm not sure if he'll be able to bully Pettis like he's been able to bully other opponents. So I'm going with my gut here, I guess. I don't know. I'm very much back and forth in this fight, but I think I might be going with old Tony Pettis here to knock off Michael Chiesa. What do you think about this fight, Pat?
Yo, this is definitely a crazy good fight. As you mentioned, Jake, two fighters with two different trajectories, it appears like right now, Pettis being 2-5 in his last seven, Chiesa being 5-2, albeit coming off of that loss most recently. Pettis coming off of a loss in his most recent fight as well against Dustin Poirier. The thing with this one, this seems to be the kind of fighter, Michael Chiesa, I mean, he's just, he's done very well for himself. I want to say 7-3 overall in his UFC career. The only fighters that have beat him have been the taller striker types that have a decent ground game. Jorge Masvidal submitted him, Joe Lozon TKO'd him, and then he was submitted by the powerhouse wrestler Kevin Lee. Be that as it may, he still has very solid wins on his resume. He submitted Beniel Dariush by rear naked choke, who's certainly just been getting better and better all the time. I mean, Beniel's definitely a super strong grappler, and for Chiesa to get the finish over him, big statement there. He also submitted Jim Miller by rear naked choke. So he's definitely got some good victories, as well as defeating Francisco Trinaldo. You know, Pettis, he's got striking. He's got the ground game. He's definitely submitted many top-notch people with ground game. I mean, submitted Benson Henderson. He's tapped out some of the very best, but he's just been so up and down as of late, granted to just only the top-tier competition. I mean, we're talking losses to Edson Barboza, Eddie Alvarez, Rafael Dos Anjos, Max Holloway, Dustin Poirier. That's a veritable murderer's row. You know, and pretty much everybody else aside from that, he's beaten, but very interesting. It's been a tough streak for Anthony Pettis, so I think that's one of the things that makes me hesitant. I feel like I should pick Anthony Pettis in this one. I feel like he is tailor-made to take out Chiesa in this one. I feel like the striking's better, and I feel like his grappling is probably just as good as Chiesa's, maybe even a touch bit better. I mean, he's definitely shown a lot of ground wizardry himself. But, man, for some reason, trajectory, man, I feel like it's a big thing for myself. I look at that a lot, and definitely doesn't mean nothing. So I think for trajectory alone, in spite of coming off of a loss, I'm going to pick Michael Chiesa to take this one.
Yeah, you know, and I don't blame you, you know, and even just, you know, not just trajectory as far as wins and losses, but as far as trajectory, as far as how they've performed, Chiesa seems to be, you know, even in his loss against Kevin Lee, didn't look bad. You know, his skills seem to be getting better and better. Well, Pettis looked like a better fighter years ago, and I'm not sure what happened, if the game passed him up, if he's been too, you know, immersed in the fame and not focusing on his career. You know, no one's really but himself to truly answer that question. But, you know, I did hear an interview with Duke Rufus, and it was interesting because he kind of alluded to the fact that the last few years Pettis had kind of got lost in the sauce, so to speak, and how now he is seen very refocused and has really, really kind of caught a second wind in his career. So we should see on Saturday what kind of performance he puts together against Michael Chiesa. This is really going to say a lot about both of them. And kind of about that, you know, this is, I guess, both guys are obviously ranked currently, so this will obviously mean a little bit for that lightweight title picture. Not immediately, but as far as, you know, who's a step or two away. And we move onward. This is another fun fight. Heavyweight fights always are fun to watch. We got Francis Ngannou, the guy who joined the UFC and went 6-0, knocking out Luis Henrique, knocking out Curtis Blaydes. First round KO against Bohan Mihailovic. Subs out Anthony Hamilton, knocks out Andrei Arlovsky, and then uppercuts Alistair Overeem into the fucking 300 section, looking unstoppable. before he got stopped pretty one-sidedly by Stipe Miocic, who seemed to have that, you know, game plan of weathering the first round and then just outpacing Francis Ngannou, who looked to be in absolutely no shape to fight a five-round fight. I don't know if embarrassed is the right word, but Francis Ngannou, especially with all the praise he had behind him, so much so that Stipe, the champion, was so kind of fed up with the UFC's marketing that he instructed Dana to give the belt to his coach and had his coach put the belt around his waist instead of allowing Dana to do so. So obviously that rubbed him the wrong way. Francis, you know, he's still probably the hardest hitter, I would say, right now in the heavyweight division between him and Junior Dos Santos. And I think Junior's kind of, his power has faded over the years. And he's taken on Derek Lewis. And when I first heard about this fight, I was like, man, Derek Lewis could drag this into deep water. But then I remember that Mark Hunt fight. And Mark Hunt starched him. And I think Francis Ngannou is going to be hitting Derek Lewis harder than Mark Hunt. However, that was a fourth-round finish. Will Francis Ngannou still be able to carry that power into, you know, the second and third rounds? This is not going to be a five-round fight, obviously. You know, I'm leaning a little bit toward Francis Ngannou, but I saw the line, and it's plus 325 for Derek Lewis. Even though I'm leaning a little bit in Ngannou, I think that is a ridiculously high line for Derek Lewis. So I might put a couple legal shekels of sports entertainment on Derek Lewis, but I don't know. This is you know, stylistically going to be one of those fights. I think where the fight's going to take place, both of these guys are going to want to bang it out. You know, you look at their record, and it's a lot of KO and TKO wins for either guy. Both guys have one loss that sticks out. Francis, his last fight against Stipe, and Derek Lewis, his loss last year to Mark Hunt. You know, the loss that Ngannou had to Stipe was very one-sided. And if I remember correctly, that Derek Lewis loss to Mark Hunt was pretty back and forth. It wasn't like Hunt dominated that fight. So I don't know. You know, I'll go ahead and pick Lewis and go ahead and not just stick my toes in the water and say it's a good line. But I will pick the Black Beast here going up against the Cameroonian Francis Ngannou. But it should be fun. This is, you know, like the first fight of this main card, you don't want to miss the first round. But if it goes past the first round, you probably do want to miss the second and third round, because I do not want to imagine a 15-minute unanimous decision, like, three-round fight between these two guys, because they're going to be gassed by a minute into the second round. Very, very much so. Pat, Francis Ngannou, Derek Lewis, what you got on it?
Jake, I always like your takes. Very insightful, well-constructed and thought out. And really, Derek Lewis does have a great chance in this. The plus 325 is pretty outstanding. I mean, in the last maybe 3 years or so, the only person that that Derek Lewis has lost to has been Mark Hunt. And he'd just been on a tear aside from that. You know, victories over Travis Brown, Marcin Tybura, he rebounded quite nicely from the Hunt loss in that one. You know, some tough fighters, Shamil Durhimov, Roy Nelson, Gabriel Gonzaga. I mean, these are not slouches here that he's been taking out. And, you know, Sean Jordan, Matt Mitrione, the other two gentlemen to defeat Derek Lewis in the UFC back in 2015 and 2014, respectively, certainly no slouches there either. So, and Derek Lewis has only gotten better again since the Sean Jordan loss in June 6th of 2015. He's been on a I want to say a 7-1 run since then. One of the most active fighters. He's certainly got a good case for him. And his cardio might actually be better than Francis Ngannou's, Jake. I mean, really, Derek Lewis is not really the poster boy of cardiovascular endurance, but he may actually have the edge in this fight. Ngannou, he's been fantastic since he burst on the scene, just absolutely knocking out everybody. Hasn't really needed anything beyond the first round a whole lot. Has gone to the second round twice in his UFC career. Once getting the doctor's stoppage to his opponent at the end of the second, and then getting the TKO middle of the way through the second against Luis Enrique. He has absolutely beaten everybody thoroughly except for the champion. But man, Derek Lewis, I mean, this is a styles make fight situation. Who's going to have the grappling edge? Could someone go towards the grappling route? Francis Ngannou definitely has the power, but who's going to have the better technique in this fight? As I sit back and I think about it, I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, endurance definitely goes a long way. Chin definitely goes a long way. I mean, Stipe Miocic wasn't able to TKO Francis Ngannou, and Derek Lewis has, getting TKO'd by Mark Hunt. That's pretty much anybody who fights Mark Hunt. Certainly no shame in that. And again, that was late in the game, almost towards the end of the fourth round. This fight is not going the fourth round. And, he's fighting a guy who he might have better cardio than. So I think, I'm with you, Jake. I think Derek Lewis is going to be able to survive the early storm and get the W in this.
Another noteworthy part of this fight, I do think the tweet of the year of 2018, and I wasn't able to pull it up, so pardon me for not wording it directly. Actually, I looked for it for a while and couldn't find it anywhere. I think the UFC buried it deep down in the back of the internet. But at some point before the fight was official and Derek Lewis was calling out Francis and Ngannou trying to get the fight, he tweeted something along the lines of, or he may have said it on Ariel's show. I forget exactly what happened, but the basis was he explained that the reason he wanted to fight Francis was because he didn't like him, because Francis's ancestors sold Derek Lewis's ancestors into slavery, which talk about some deep-seated trash talk. And actually pretty fucking historically hilarious trash talk. Derek Lewis always finding something to say. I think he had the Ronda Rousey quotes after he won a while back. Always has something interesting to say, the Black Beast, Derek Lewis. So I guess we're both picking as an underdog look against Francis Ngannou. Co-main event. We got, man, this is, and I have heard similar sentiments, and, I do kind of echo them, but at the same time, it is good that this fight is being put on, the premier card of the year, International Fight Week. Max Holloway against Brian Ortega. This fight is so good for so many reasons. We've had fights seeing, the new guard against the old guard. This is the new guard against the new guard. Both of these guys are just so high, highly skilled in so many areas. Trying to pick out flaws in either guy's game are so hard when you have Max, who is a master on the ground and standing up, makes everything look so simple. And you have Brian Ortega, who obviously is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu genius, growing up training with the Gracies, and striking-wise, look no further than his fight against Frankie Edgar. The iron-chinned Frankie Edgar, one of the most legendary chins of all times, hits him with an elbow that knocks him to his knees and devastates one of the most iron chins of all time with strikes. Just man, this is such a fun fight. You know, I have led breaking down the first few. I'll let you lead off here. What do you see going down here? You know, you have Maxi. He won the belt, I guess, and only has one defense against Jose Aldo. Even though it feels like he's been around and done so much more, I think he's on like a 12 fight winning streak. You know, his last two, those huge wins against Jose Aldo, and you have Brian Ortega, who's never lost in his career, 14-0. That huge win against Frankie Edgar, his last fight. I think size wise, Holloway has the advantage. Holloway 5'11" with a 69-inch reach. Brian 3 inches shorter, but actually the same reach there. Both of them obviously 145. Stylistically trying to kind of imagine where it's going to take place and who's going to have the edge. What do you think about this fight, Pat?
Oh, Jake, this is a great fight. This is a really tough one to call. I mean, Max Holloway has come leaps and bounds. I mean, even from his debut against Dustin Poirier, really looks like a young kid with a lot of potential, and he has realized it and then some. As you mentioned, the 12 fight winning streak, beating Jose Aldo twice, TKOing him twice in consecutive fights. Man, just really making a statement. Really known to stand and bang. He does have a couple submission victories on his record, most notably against Cub Swanson, as well as Andre Feely. But you know, gosh, the footwork, the striking, he's really just putting it together there. One guy that understands the reach that he has against a lot of the guys. I mean, there's a lot of big 145ers these days, surprisingly. A lot of lanky guys at 145. But Holloway really uses that so expertly in all facets of what he does. You know, it's fantastic to be a great grappler, but are you going to be able to get a hold of him? Or will you be able to grab onto him, you know, or will he be hitting you with that one and two piece on your way in, just busting you up the whole entire time? It's, man, and that's exactly what he's been doing to everybody, just absolutely piecing everybody up, just looking like the world-class champion that he is. Brian Ortega, Jake, as you also mentioned, has not been defeated in professional mixed martial arts. He has won no contest, but that was a win. Overturned for Drew Standalone. That was his UFC debut. But man, he himself has pretty much had his way with everybody. You look back, and I don't think there was a particular fight of his that was, I would say, a come-from-behind victory, or, you know, man, he really gutted this one out and, you know, had this late finish to, you know, save it from going to the judges' scorecards. A lot of late finishes, but mostly just because he's been beating guys up the entire time. Really has not shown a whole lot of vulnerabilities himself. Not a small featherweight himself either. I want to say maybe just a bit shorter than Holloway, but man, very, very well built. Definitely seems like a very solid 145 pounder. And his style being more grappling centric, I mean, he's got some great knockouts on his resume as well. Frankie Edgar and Clay Guida, those are two guys that are virtually impossible to stop. He TKO'd the both of them. And, you know, he's submitted some very high level guys as well. So having the lower center of gravity, having that grappling strong suit, that is one area that in the past we have seen Max Holloway a little issue with. I mean, although he was only submitted by Dustin Poirier in his UFC debut, even a wrestler like Dennis Bermudez, who defeated him by split decision, wasn't able to get the submission there. He's only been submitted one time, but this is, in Brian Ortega, a level of grappling that he has not dealt with in some time. And, man, this is a super tough fight to call. It's, I feel like this is a coin flip. It's pretty close odds, if I'm not mistaken, Jake, on this one, as far as how Vegas has it. And rightfully so, for as good of a tear as Holloway's on, Brian Ortega, his whole career has just been a tear. At this point, though, I think I'm going to have to go with Brian Ortega, Jake. I think he's going to come in with the wrestling. I think he's got the striking as well. And the strength that he has in that grappling, as well as the striking he has, I mean, it's just such a great complement to one another. As fantastic as Max Holloway is, I hate to do it, but I'm picking Brian Ortega in this one.
Yeah, you know, I thought you might, you know, I felt the Cali vibes going into the show. I'm going the other way. I'm going with Max Holloway. You know, I just feel like Max is going to bring something to the table that, yes, even though Brian Ortega has fought a lot of guys, Max just brings this relentless, suffocating style. And I don't, you know, or Ortega has been able to finish fights by locking up quick subs against guys who really don't have the best jiu-jitsu skills. I think Max is a little bit past that. I don't think he's going to be as vulnerable to getting caught in you know, a quick clamp down. You know, we have seen a lot of triangles from Brian Ortega. That's why they call him T-City. I don't think he's going to be able to catch a triangle on Max. You know, it's honestly hard to see the fight get finished either way. You know, we know Brian won't get subbed out. You know, if it is a sub, it would probably be Brian subbing out Max. And even then, I just don't see it happening. You know, Max has lost one submission loss early in his career, a mounted triangle armbar to Dustin Poirier at UFC 143. That was over 6 years ago, and Max has progressed a tremendous amount since then. So, you know, I really don't see this fight being finished with strikes either. And I think it goes all five rounds. I think Brian might get that first or second round, but I think the longer the fight wanes, you know, Max has... Even though he's never fought into the championship rounds, I think he has that experience and of just, you know, prepping himself for a 5-round fight. And I think in the later rounds it'll be Max. But I mean, you know, like you said, this is close in Vegas for a reason, and I don't doubt that at all. I'm leaning toward the current champion Max Holloway on this one. Bumping us up to the main event, the super fight. We've seen fights that will get bigger draws. You know, I've obviously fights with Brock Lesnar and Conor and all that. But just, you know, as far as just looking at, you know, the relevancy of the championships and all that, this is the biggest fight ever. This is the heavyweight champ versus the champ at 205, which 205 has historically been the glamour division, and the champ at heavyweight has always been, you know, thought of to be the baddest man on the planet and all that. We've heard whispers of doing, you know, the 205 champ versus the 265 champ all the way back when you know, Randy was on top, you know, and then when it was Kane at 265 and John Jones at 205. And we're finally seeing it turn into something here with Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier. Stipe, now the most successful heavyweight champion of all time. The first person to ever defend that belt 3 times. Daniel Cormier, 20-1. A very successful career at both light heavyweight and heavyweight. The only loss, obviously, to his kryptonite, John Jones. Man, and you know, this is guys with such storied careers already. Oh man, this is really tough to pick. And you know, before I give my pick, I will say Daniel Cormier is my favorite fighter, so I am gonna go into it a little bit biased. But you know, I don't know. You know, Pat here, I'll let you make your pick before I get into why I'm picking DC here. Maybe we can do a little bit of back and forth on it if you agree or disagree. But who are you picking in this one? You know, and I guess it all kind of comes down to where you see the fight going down, because obviously both of their styles that they come into the fight with are very differently. But who are you picking in this super fight? Where do you think the fight goes down stylistically? All that good stuff.
Oh, my goodness, Jake. Well, for me, this is another coin flip fight. I mean, and this is champion versus champion, light heavyweight champion versus heavyweight champion, Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic. Daniel Cormier himself, an undefeated heavyweight at the highest levels, winning the Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix against some of the best in the world. I believe he was an alternate in that one. Had two fights in the Grand Prix, if memory serves correctly. But, man, he had a storied legacy. Went down to light heavyweight to chase the championship over there. Beat literally everybody except for John Jones, who was popped for steroids every single time they fought. So, you know, kind of a wash there, some would say. But, man, he's taking on Stipe Miocic, a guy who has defended the title more times than anyone ever has in the heavyweight division. And that's a huge statement. I mean, for as long as the heavyweight division's been around, with some of the names that have held that title, you know, the Brock Lesnar's, the Cain Velasquez's, Junior Dos Santos's, guys that we look at and we're like, who's going to beat this guy? And none of them had defended the belt even three times in a row. Stipe being the first man to do it, looking for that fourth. And I feel like he has all the skill sets. He's got solid skills everywhere. I feel like he's got good takedown defense. He's a much larger opponent than Daniel Cormier. I mean, he's definitely got the height and the reach. The boxing is very on point. But, man, Daniel Cormier, Jake, I don't know, and I can see how you'd be wanting to go with DC, because he's undefeated at heavyweight. He had never lost, and he's beat, you know, beating big dudes is all he ever did at heavyweight, from Bigfoot Silva to, I mean, you know, whoever you want. I mean, even Alexander Gustafsson. I mean, he's 6'5 in the 205-pound division, and, you know, he beat him up thoroughly. No matter how big they are, Daniel Cormier, Josh Barnett, I can still see him in that Strikeforce heavyweight tournament just body slamming him like it was WWE, just throwing him around like it was nobody's business. And that is something Stipe Miocic has literally never faced. You look at his record, and I really don't see one name that is even as close as the level of wrestler that Daniel Cormier is. Man, I'd really love to play devil's advocate here for you, Jake, and I'm glad I could do that with Brian Ortega versus Max Holloway. And actually, as you were talking about that one, I was like, man, can I switch my pick to Max Holloway? Because, you know, now that you're talking about it, dang, it really is hard to pick against him. But, geez, for this fight, you know what? Screw it, I am going to play devil's advocate. Stipe Miocic, he's going to beat Daniel Cormier, Jake. And you know why that is? Because he is special. He is one of the greatest. He has defended that belt more times than anybody. I think he's going to extend that record here. I think he's going to be able to use that reach. He's going to be able to stop the takedowns. And, you know, he's got experience in five-round wars. And he's also got the power to stop someone. And Daniel Cormier, he's getting up there in age. He's been fighting down there at 205 for a while now. And, you know, these heavyweights, man, These are some big guys. I know he's used to going against them, but Stipe is a heavyweight champion of the world. He's got them heavy hands, and I think he's going to put him on Stipe, or I think he's going to put him on Daniel Cormier early. I think Stipe finishes him first round knockout, Jake.
Damn. Well, you know, if Stipe were to win, I think that's how it's going to get won. Stipe brings some incredible power, and we've seen Cormier get rocked in the first round. Look no further than, you know, that first fight he had against Anthony Johnson. And, you know, you did make one point that I was going to get to. Stipe, he's never really fought a wrestler like DC, and he's almost fought exclusively bangers. When you go through his record, you know, I mean, just looking at it, you have Francis Ngannou, Junior Dos Santos, Alistair Overeem, Fabricio Werdum, Andrei Arlovsky, Mark Hunt, Junior Dos Santos, Fabio Maldonado, Gabe Gonzaga, Roy Nelson. I mean, just banger after banger after banger. Really the only elite wrestlers in the heavyweight division you go back and think about it. Josh Barnett, Cain Velasquez, Daniel Cormier, Brock Lesnar, Randy Couture. I mean, wrestling has been something that has seen a lot of success at other divisions, but the punching power of a lot of these guys at 265, obviously for good reason, has given them a lot of success, just them being so big. So you made the point about Stipe not facing many wrestlers. I would be picking Stipe Miocic in this fight if he could kick. Period. If Stipe Miocic could head kick like Alistair Overeem, I would be picking Stipe here. Because that's really the one aspect of John Jones' game that was able to not negate his wrestling, but force Daniel Cormier to be much more conservative with his wrestling. And in the second fight, the fight that was turned over to a no contest, because John Jones is a cheating steroid user, John Jones landed that left head kick that even Daniel Cormier himself predicted that Jones would be trying to use in a press conference before the first fight. So, I really stylistically, that's the one X factor that I look at and think, man, Stipe is dangerous, but only throwing hands. And Daniel Cormier has fought plenty of guys at heavyweight who have heavy hands, but it's the kickers that kind of make him not neutralize his wrestling, but force him to be much less aggressive with tying folks up, going for, you know, those wild takedowns like you saw against Josh Barnett. And honestly, I would not be shocked if DC landed a similar takedown against Stipe that he did against Josh Barnett, because you look at Stipe's record. He hasn't just been fighting a bunch of bangers. He's been fighting some big-ass dudes. Francis Ngannou, Alistair Overeem, Fabricio Werdum, Junior Dos Santos, all of these guys, 6'3+. Daniel Cormier is coming in, I believe, 5'11". He's going to be able to get under Stipe, unlike any of these other guys have. So, Stipe, and I will also, as a caveat to all of this, say Stipe does not get near enough credit. I don't know why he's not a mainstream superstar. I mean, what more do you want from a dude? I mean, I guess the only reason he's not a mainstream star, which is sad, is because he doesn't talk shit, and he seems like an overall nice guy who does not stir the pot. But, I mean, this is a handsome dude who's literally a firefighter, works two or three days a week, even, like, after he won the belt. Like, he is currently still a firefighter. He speaks well. He's hilarious. He's funny. He's good. You know, I'm not to ride the guy's dick, but you know, I definitely could understand why he was kind of put off after the Francis and Ngannou fight. You know, how it seemed like that whole build up to the fight, similarly to the way they did Nunez versus Rousey. They kind of built the challenger up to be this monster, giving no real credit to the current champion in Stipe. And I thought that was a hilarious move, having his coach put the belt on him instead of Dana. So I got DC, you got Miocic. Either way, who do you think is next in line? Who do you think the winner is going to face next up in this heavyweight championship lineage?
Oh, man, you know what? That's really a tough one. I mean, as far as up-and-comers go, heck, if Derek Lewis is able to beat Francis Ngannou, I feel like that would give him a decent enough. I mean, gosh, his overall record is pretty legit in the heavyweight division. I would say that'd be good for him. I mean, Francis Ngannou, I could see him getting right back in there. I would say probably the winner of that fight. Actually, how about you?
All right, this is going to be, and if I do pick it right, I will play this clip back. I might edit out when I stutter, but I will play this clip back and boast about it. This is what I think goes down next. I think DC wins. I think the winner of this fight gets Brock Lesnar. I think Lesnar obviously would lose to either guy. Then I think we see Jon Jones step in. And if it's DC, I think he fights Brock at 265, fights Jones at 265, then retires. Then we see Cain Velasquez for Stipe Miocic for the belt. I still have a feeling that Cain is so skilled. Stipe is the most successful heavyweight of all time, and I would never take that from him. But I want to see Cain step back in there so bad, man. The prime for 5 years, it seemed like, during the prime of his career, he only fought two different guys in Junior and Bigfoot Silva. I would love to see Cain eventually fight Stipe. If Stipe wins, maybe that's the next one. I might be reaching a little far with my pick on Brock Lesnar, but I don't know.
No, I think that's very, very strong possibility. I mean, there's certainly been a lot of talk, a lot of illusions regarding Brock coming back to the UFC as of late. So certainly not outside the realm of possibility. And we all know the UFC, they're trying to do those money fights, trying to do the big fights. And very few things constitute more of a money fight in the UFC than a fight that involves Brock Lesnar. So definitely highly possible. Plus, I think his contract is coming up fairly soon in WWE. I think that's a very strong possibility.
And I guess that does it for our UFC 226 main card preview. We will be back if anything wild happens between now and the card. We hope there's no big news at the weigh-ins. It seems like that happens far too often, that the day before the fight we get news on fights being canceled and replacement fights filling in. My fingers are crossed. I'm knocking on wood. I don't want to jinx anything for UFC 226. But we hope all goes well. And if it does, we will catch you next. Or if it does, if it goes well and we have no news, then we will catch you early next week. If anything crazy happens, then we will catch you before then. But either way, we appreciate the shit out of you listening. Pat's on Twitter. It's @PatPeteJones. Anything for him before we get out of here?
Oh, you know, it's nothing but love. Very excited for the International Fight Week. Those Friday and Saturday cards, back-to-back nights of fights. Very pumped up. Hope everyone has a safe weekend.
Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy UFC 226. Ramses, keep fighting, brother. We love the fuck out of you. Until then, we'll see you. We gone.